fills up our plates. Papa's saying grace. Louisiana living sweet as sugar on beignets.
Hey y'all, my friend Jolena Petersheim will be joining me in a bit to talk about her new book, How the Light Gets In. Jolena and her husband live in the mountains of Tennessee with their three young daughters. How the Light Gets In is Jolena's fifth novel, and it's a modern retelling of Ruth, set in a cranberry bog in Wisconsin. It will hook you from page one. Full disclosure, Jolena is a longtime friend, but that is not coloring my review. It is an incredible tale, and we'll talk to Jolena about it in just a bit. But first, let's chat. We've had a sneak peek of some warmer spring days lately, and it has been wonderful. It even coaxed me outside for a little yard work, where I had a bit of excitement and a couple remedial lessons. In no particular order, here's my list of what I learned from my time outdoors. Number one, writing is not cardiovascular. Number two, yard work is cardiovascular. Number three, I am way out of shape. See number one. Number four, I have unrealistic expectations of what I can accomplish in a given day. Number five, my yard is ginormous and apparently getting larger. Number six, and this is the big one, snakes are sneaky varmints. And number seven, I can still move quickly. If you were following me on social media right now, you would see a picture of a sneaky snake that met me on the front porch. I'm not sure who got the biggest fright, but that evil critter climbed up the brick wall in my sight. Up the wall. He looked like snake mortar in my picture. Go find it. Granted, he was a garter snake and everybody and their mama has tried to tell me he wasn't dangerous. But as I've said time and again, if he can make me hurt myself getting away, he is dangerous. Lethal, even. But all of this buries the headline, y'all. Did you hear me say he was climbing the brick wall? Hello? Snakes climbing walls should be illegal. It's immoral, and it should be illegal. In other news, the beloved farmer told me we're in for another round of cold temperatures here in northeast Louisiana this weekend. So I reckon it's back to my spot by the fireplace for now. I am done with winter, but apparently winter is not done with me. Welcome back. You're listening to All Things Southern, and I am visiting with my sweet friend Jolena Petersheim, who has written a book called How the Light Gets In that I really want to tease you with today. I want to whet your appetite so that you go out and get this book or hit an online link and get a copy sent to you immediately. I enjoyed it that much. Hello, Jolena.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me here.
You are so welcome. I am delighted. I need you to know, kind of even as we begin, I'm thinking of my daughter and daughter-in-law who would both like to be sitting here with me talking to you because of what this book has meant to all of us. Here's a funny for you before we get into it, Jolena. When we finish your book, when Carrie finished it, Jessica finished it, I've given it to other people. And our term is debrief because of the turn, there's the word I'm looking for, that the book takes that catches us all off guard and is just so startling and brings you to such a place of, oh my gosh, what would I do in that moment? And so after we finish the book, we're like, okay, we need to talk, you know, like, what would you do? What would I do? And nothing better could be said, I don't believe, about your work than you could prompt such conversations.
Thank you. Jessica sent me an email and talked to me about the characters and said how Carrie had enjoyed it. And I don't know, it's just always, even though this is my fifth book, baby, it's always reassuring to hear somebody get in touch to that extent that they'll be talking about it in the kitchen, you know, or over coffee.
Yeah. We're like, okay, we need to debrief. We need to talk this through. You know, it's almost like we were all in that moment together and we can take ourselves back there. So let's do that for our audience. Those that are with us today that are listening, I want to bring them along on this journey of how the light gets in. So I'm going to like cede the floor to you, Jolena, and let you tell us how this idea came to you. Where were you? What was happening in your life when these characters began to talk to you?
Well, the genesis of this story came about 6 years ago. I have a 7-year-old daughter. She just had her birthday yesterday. And we were in Wisconsin 6 years ago. And my husband was out there hunting with his cousins and his uncles. And I was watching my little girl. So I took her for a walk. It was November and really cold outside. The dirt road was icy with snow. And I was pushing the stroller. She was all bundled up. And I just had this image of a woman coming there after having lost almost everything, including her spouse. And I went back into the farmhouse, got her unbundled, put her down for a nap. And it suddenly hit me that this is a modern retelling of Ruth. And I knew I wanted to set it in Wisconsin just because it's a different land to me than I was raised in Tennessee. I'm a Southern Belle like Miss Shelley. And yet come into Wisconsin, it was just a different, you know, culture and a lot of different things there to kind of be approached with. And I thought, what if this would be Ruth and she came here and started again? What would that look like? And then my husband's uncle, he shared an article with me from a newspaper about a man who only used old-fashioned equipment to harvest his cranberries. Turns out that Wisconsin is the nation's leading producer of cranberries. You know, you would think it was, you know, cheese because they're known for being like the dairy capital, but they're actually the nation's cranberry capital and they process a lot of cranberry. And so that's when I knew I would have modern been on Ruth set in a Mennonite community that it's all surrounded around the cranberry harvest. So instead of Ruth going to glean barley in the field, she's going to glean cranberries. But this concept became really personal to me. My husband and I, about 2 years later, after I took that walk, we moved out to Wisconsin, 7 miles from that farmhouse where I took that walk in November. And we lived there. Mm-hmm. We set up our little farm as much as we could. And 8 weeks after we moved, my husband had emergency surgery to remove a benign tumor. So it was non-cancerous, but it was still a very, you know, dire situation. And it's okay. And yet it was the middle of the harshest winter for me that I'd ever experienced. And just having 2 young children and being at the farmhouse with so much uncertainty, then that story, that concept that was kind of just fictional became real. And I placed myself in those shoes, like wrestling with faith and grief. And because it's a grief, not just of, you know, the physical loss of her husband, but the loss of dreams, the shifting of, you know, viewpoints. I wanted to move home after 2 years in Wisconsin and my husband didn't want to. So we kind of had to just wrestle with that. And it didn't take long though. He really honored me because we'd moved out there in a 2-year tried out plan. So he put our farm up on the market. 2 weeks later, it sold. And we suddenly found ourselves packing and moving back to Tennessee. And we entered the hardest season of our marriage after, at that point, they were married 7 or 8 years. And we've now been married 10 and a half. But then we moved home to family. And yet my husband and I weren't able to connect. And we have 3 young children. So, you know, at 7 and 4 and 1, their ages are right now. And it's easy as a mom to always want to pray for them, to put their needs before my marriage. And yet I contacted an older woman friend and she said, you know, put your husband at the forefront of your prayer life. Just pray for him and love him. And when you're praying for someone, it's really hard to have your defenses up. And so instead of being frustrated that he was going through a season of transition and the loss of his dreams for homesteading Wisconsin, you know, I was able to, you know, love him through that and see his viewpoint. And of course he was putting his family first already. Of course he loved us. I just needed to relax in that love and relax in the love that Jesus had for me. And I don't know, we came back together through that, the writing of this novel. And so it became more than just a novel. It became kind of our life story. And I hope it just brings healing and shows people how the light actually gets in.
Marcy, you recap that so succinctly and articulately, but having been your friend and watched this from a distance, you know, the depth of life that are involved in those few moments of, you know, kind of recapping the story and when y'all got the diagnosis and what y'all went through and moving there to Wisconsin, moving back to Tennessee and all the life that went on. you do live with grace, Jolena, and I can see Jesus in your life. And so I know you're welcome. I know that there were hard times, but I also knew who you were leaning on. But my heart just now, as you were kind of retelling the story, I was thinking about your man. And, you know, I've kind of watched the story through your eyes. That's just what we do. You know, you're my friend. I know his name, and that's about what I know of Randy. And yet for the first time, I began to think about this from his viewpoint and realizing it made me then start thinking about the characters and what happened in the story and the choices that your main character had to make. And gosh, now I need to debrief again with my girls because I've got a whole lot more things going on in my head. So why don't we set up the storyline so that, you know, we're kind of talking all around the subject because I just love you and I just enjoy chatting with you. But we need to set up the storyline so that those that are listening can kind of come into our little world here.
Well, with the story of Ruth, it kind of came about, I imagine this woman, you know, coming to Wisconsin and after her, you know, it follows the biblical retelling after her husband and her father-in-law are both killed in a bombing in Afghanistan. And her mother-in-law, they work for kind of like a Doctors Without Borders establishment, but we changed it to Physicians International. And so she and her husband met doing volunteer work at an orphanage in Colombia, which my husband and I actually went to visit before we were dating, which is a fun little history tidbit for you. But so she connects with him. They get married. They're married for about 5 years and he passes away in the bombing, the same as his father-in-law. And then the Mabel character is a little bit like Naomi and she invites Ruth to come out to Wisconsin and kind of bury their husbands and find healing. So when she's out there, she has these two young daughters because I have young daughters. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to really tap into this character, Ruth, I need her to go through grief, not just for herself, but for her children, because I know after my husband's diagnosis, I was more afraid for my children than I was for myself, because as a mom, your emotions, you know, come secondly. And I just pictured that experience and this land and it just came alive for me. I haven't really experienced this ease of writing since my debut, The Outcast. And I think a lot of it just had to go along with the fact that I needed to process so deeply this journey of the heart. And so I just conjured it forth and she goes to this community and falls in love with the Boaz character and his name is Elam. And yet, you know, you can read this on the back cover. What if Chandler, her husband, is not actually dead? You know, what happens from there? If she's kind of given her heart to this man and found love and healing for her heart, and then what if it's a case of mistaken identity? And right as she's about to rewrite her life story, you know, her husband comes back and wants to fall in love again after they've gone through a really hard time. Like, what's the answer to that? How do we choose? Do we choose the vows that they've taken, you know, till death do you part? What if you've already buried him? Do you stay true to those vows? So that's kind of where I explored it from there.
At what part of the story, because it does take a turn and you've alluded to it a little bit there. And of course, we want to leave all the delightful surprise of the book for our other readers to experience the way that Jessica and I and Carrie and I did. So I want to be careful with your storyline. But where were you in the process of writing this that you began to see the story changing and that fork in the road ahead of you? I mean, did you plot that?
No. I'm a little bit of a pantser versus a plotter. And I've learned to kind of curb that because with my young girls, writing kind of has to be more of a discipline. And I do write out a synopsis, but I had no idea that curveball was going to be thrown in there until I was steam mopping the floor, because that's when my good ideas hit me. And I was steam mopping my floor and suddenly I knew the twist and I was really trying to figure it out. And I kind of talk and I mop and I pray. And I mean, I pray usually in my head, but this kind of helps me move in process. And so just kind of asking for wisdom and trying to figure out this plot snarl, because I'd painted myself in a corner and I didn't know how to get out of it. And then all of a sudden it hit me. And then every scene started lining up, it just unfolded. And suddenly the whole story opened up and I knew what would happen. And I got cold chills and my scalp started prickling. And meanwhile, I'm like stopping mopping the floor and steam's everywhere and I'm in the breezeway. But I still remember it was a Friday night because we have life group with our church. And so I went that Friday night and I told the group, I'm like, I figured it out.
When I read the twist, you should have seen me. Okay, so I'm in the book. I get to the twist, and I'm like, no. I mean, I can't decide if I like the way this twist is going, or I don't want the twist to go this way. And I was actually supposed to be going to sleep. It was past my bedtime when I hit the twist. Well, of course, I can't go to bed now, you know. And so I've got the book in my hands. I'm going backwards and seeing, wait, there are all these clues that this was coming. And now I'm finding that even more amazing because the writer herself didn't know it was coming. So, you know, there, but I saw glimpses of it. And then, of course, I didn't read ahead because I'm not that person. I couldn't, you know, so I had to read the entire rest of the book that night. And then, though I didn't have anyone to debrief with, I think the Lord and I just debriefed. I mean, I was just praying myself to sleep, just thinking about the decisions that this young mom had to make. And I believe that brings me to one of the takeaways that I get from all of your writing, Jolena. And I've enjoyed all of your books. We really should stop and talk about how we met, and we'll get there because that's a funny story. But I've enjoyed all of your books, but I love the fact that your characters face real life head on. There is no pie in the sky in your writing. You know, you address some really hard decisions, and yet they, you can see the gospel, even if it's not laid out. You can see what them wrestle with, what the Lord would have them do. Is that intentional? What do you want a reader, say that a reader that puts this book down, what message are you wanting to leave with them?
What I was really trying to explore in this one, my initial question, just like, what is God's will for my life, for readers' lives? Like, is God's will just one plan, or can we take different paths? Like, he gives us a free will. Mm-hmm. So which path is he wanting us to take? You know, in the middle of writing this novel, we'd moved back to Tennessee, and yet we're trying to find ourselves like in the midst of community again and church. And we felt like we're starting over, even though we had been here before, because we were different people after our experiences in Wisconsin. So, you know, was it God's will that we moved back? Should we stay? Like, what exactly did that look like? What should that look like? When I was 17, I was waitressing, and this gentleman, he asked what I was going to do after high school. And I said, I wasn't sure if I was going to join Youth with a Mission, their Nashville base was close to where I lived, or if I was going to go straight to college. And he held out his hand. I'll never forget it. He had this carpenter's hand, just like my dad is a carpenter. And he said, what if God's will is like this hand? There are five, and he held out his fingers, and he said, there are five different paths your life could take, but regardless of what you choose, are you not still within his hand? And that just stuck with me, and it gave me such peace. And I forgot about it until I was writing this story, and that all came back to me. Like, you know, what is God's path for our life? And of course, there, he gives us moral parameters. Like, I believe Ruth's husband is still alive. She needs to choose her husband. And just, you know, trying to seek his heart and allowing our desires of our heart to match up with his plan for our life. So that's kind of what I wanted to explore. And I didn't give any, you know, clear-cut answers. I more want to present that concept and just allow readers to mull it over themselves and kind of dig deeper in the word and just ask for wisdom. But yeah, I like to explore things that have come to me, just questions that arrive. I write to process life, and I'm so glad for that outlet because I do process life very deeply. And so it just keeps me from talking my husband's ear off.
Wow. I am kind of sitting here thinking about his analogy and how much I love it. Of that hand. I was reading, this is a little off topic, but I was in my Bible study earlier today. I was reading about Jacob and Esau. I had ran a reference that took me back there. And you touched a little bit on my thoughts earlier this morning, because, you know, we know that if you're a Bible student out there and you can jump into the story of Jacob and Esau with me, Jacob tricked his older brother into giving him his birthright. And so here's what was interesting to me, Jolena, was that it was meant to be his, even from the time the twins were born.
Isn't that crazy?
He said, yeah, that this birthright was supposed to be his. And so I have to believe, as I'm reading the word, that it was going to be his,
but another one of those fingers on that hand. You know, there was going to be another way that he was going to get that birthright.
Exactly.
And he went around, he went about it the wrong way. And then, you know, later on had to learn some more lessons. And maybe you and I in a different conversation, I'll tell you some of the takeaway that the Lord gave me this morning on. Maybe it's a Jolena novel. I don't know, because I'm a nonfiction writer, you know, so I'm not writing novels. So maybe it's for you. But it really does line up with what that gentleman told you. And so that's going to stay on my heart as well. I appreciate that. Tell me a little bit about your writing craft with three little girls. I know their ages. Tell our listeners how old they are, and maybe they'll understand why you're getting these brainstorms as you steam up, because there cannot be a lot of downtime for writing.
No, there's definitely not. It's gotten more and more complicated as the years have gone by. I got my contract when my firstborn daughter was only 12 weeks old. So I went on from there. She was 12 weeks old. And then, you know, I had another daughter and then another daughter every 2 years, it felt like. And I've written 5 novels in the past 7 years, I guess. And I just take it nap time by nap time, just, you know, sit down at the kitchen table. I've never had an office since I started writing. And so I just write at my kitchen table. We do so much life at the kitchen table. We read and we eat and, you know, it's really sweet. We have all these memories here. And so just trying to fit it in when I can. Now that the baby's sleeping through the night, I wake up at 5:30 and I write till about 6:40 when my firstborn daughter wakes up for her school, and then write again at nap time. So it's just a little bit of fitting in, but it's something that makes my heart come alive. And I'm a happier mom and wife, and when I have time, just to process life through words.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, very much like earlier you said that you have to be more intentional as a plotter instead of a pantser. And, you know, Jolene and I are talking about, for those of you who aren't writers out there, is many people plot their work out and some fly by the seat of their pants. And so that's the analogy that we're using. I was thinking, Jolene, as you described that, you know, you've had to become more intentional there about plotting, that what I have learned about writing, at least from, you know, my vantage point where I am, I used to wait for inspiration to just slay me, you know, and you have to learn, it's kind of like an honoring thing to the work, to the Lord. The ministry's called me to, I have to put the bottom in the chair and discipline myself to write and not wait on that sudden burst of inspiration. How would you speak to that?
Oh, it's so true. I mean, there's a quote, I can't remember it exactly, but it's like inspiration is 75% perspiration, you know, like 25% inspiration. Like it's a matter of being consistent and disciplined and knowing the end result, like just taking it little bite at a time, like just every day, just bird by bird, you know, sentence by sentence, paragraph, and then the paragraphs become a chapter. And one of my friends asked, well, you know, how do I get started? And I said, just 500 words a day. Like, don't make your goals too crazy. I mean, I'm a slow writer compared to some of my friends can crank it out and they're amazing. And I hope to be able to kind of produce a novel a year, but at this point it's about a novel every 2 years. But just like seeing, not comparing yourself to somebody else, like just allowing them to enjoy their journey and set your own pace and just follow it and just ask God to lead you and to give you grace. And my husband and I have, you know, made some to sign another contract just to let our family get a little bit more settled. He had another major surgery in January. And so we just kind of had to have 2 months to kind of recoup from that. And I'm watching How the Light Gets In, and my baby's now sleeping through the night. So I feel like we're again on solid ground and I can pursue another contract. Right. But before then, it's just like, okay, let's just kind of get settled here and let the dust settle before.
Yeah. Let's breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I remember taking a creative writing class when I was in high school, and the lady teaching it, she was just this intriguing woman that was back in town for just a short period of time. And the school had hooked her up, you know, like rooked her in to do this creative writing class. And she was very much of a eccentric person. And I thought she was fascinating. And she talked about the writer's muse all the time. And that word, just, you know, it stuck with me. And I was way knee deep into this writing life before I realized that my muse was just, I just needed to give up on her and just put myself in a chair and start writing, because we try to make it, or we can think, let me say it that way, we can think it's more glamorous than it is. But it's about sitting down, those of you who are listening and want to write, it's about putting yourself in that chair and just offering your work to the Lord and getting started. So, Jolena, tell me this. We're about close to wrapping up right here, and I'm just thinking about how we met, and I want you to tell that story. I know what my memories are of meeting you at a writer's festival in Nashville, I do believe, but why don't you tell me what your memories are?
Well, I met you there. Was that when I clogged?
Yes.
Yes, because River made me... Our mutual friend, River Jordan, we were at like a writing party, and she made me get up and clog. And being the introverted person I am, I got up there and clogged. I'm not actually introverted. And so Shelly and I kind of got connected through that night. And yeah, you've always been so sweet to me. I mean, I just followed you all around like a little groupie, and you encouraged me and didn't at all make me feel silly for pursuing something at about 24 years old. Yeah. So that's my memory. Does it match up with yours?
Absolutely. I am grinning here on this side of the screen because I think I don't remember which book that I was there promoting, but I do remember meeting you, and you had all these ideas. You wanted to be a novelist. You had, you know, not yet gotten a contract, but you were just getting started. And I remember just being amazed at this young, beautiful, young, blonde-headed woman that just said, sure, and got up and clogged in a room full of these professional writers, which is an industry you wanted to be in. And many people in that setting would have been very hesitant about that, or, you know, protecting themselves or whatever. And instead, River's like, we have a great band going on, you know, there's a beautiful stage up there. And River Jordan is like, you clog, don't you, Jolena? Clog for us. And then the next thing I know, this beautiful young blonde woman is up on the stage just clogging her heart out, and the room is going crazy. And it was just such a special moment. And I think back on that often. I'm glad that you have not forgotten it either, because it's special to me. And it makes me smile. I hope it makes someone else smile today, like your work does. Tell me before we go, what's next? What are you working on?
Well, right now I'm working on a bit of a time slip novel. It's based in historical fiction, and it's not contracted yet. So I'm kind of keeping it quiet at this point. But let's just say it's been a challenge, but it's been immensely rewarding. And the idea came to me a couple years ago when I had the concept of like, when I meet people who are broken, I long to be able to go back to the point when the brokenness happened and just hold them and speak identity and value into their hearts and hear their stories. There's these crucial points where kind of the scars took place and the brokenness took place. And if I could just go back and speak, you know, you are loved, you are worthy, even now, you know, Jesus loves you right where you are. And so that's where the idea came about. And so I have this whole historical basis for this broken woman who I'm going to try to use the medium of story to try to like fix her past.
Okay. I'm going to be wanting to read that one too. And I suppose I will stay up all night to finish it, because that's what I do with Jolena Petersheim's novels. Jolena, I just thank you for being by to visit with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Shelley. I appreciate you.
I remember singing with Roy Rogers at the movies when the West was really wild. 'Cause I was country when country wasn't cool. Yeah, I was country when country wasn't cool.
You're listening to All Things Southern. Now, here's your host, the author of Suck Your Stomach In and Put Some Color On, Shelley Tomlinson.
Welcome back to the All Things Southern Kitchen. The way I see it, you just can't have enough slaw recipes. Am I right? This is my jalapeno slaw with fresh lime, and it will make your cabbage stand up and sing. We'll begin with the dressing. We're going to combine a cup of fresh lime juice with 3 cups of apple cider vinegar, a cup of honey, 4 tablespoons of ground cumin, and about 3 tablespoons of sugar. Now feel free to cut that sugar. I do lately, and we don't miss it.
We'll stir these ingredients until the sugar dissolves and they all decide to get along. Y'all, call me silly, but I really like to put all of these dressing ingredients in a Ziploc bag and shake it like crazy. Shake, shake, shake. Shake, shake, shake. Shake your dressing. Excuse me. It just blends so well. Then we'll pour our dressing over our base. That's a head of cabbage, 3 red peppers, 4 to 5 carrots, 3 diced green onions, and a couple jalapenos. All with as small a dice as you can manage. Side note, it's not in the recipe, but you absolutely cannot go wrong adding crumbled bacon to this. Just say it. Stir well, season with salt and pepper, and serve. Mmm. That's my jalapeno slaw with fresh lime. You can serve it over grilled chicken breast, as a topping for quesadillas and tacos, or as a simple side. Just serve it. It's mighty good eating. From the All Things Southern Kitchen to yours. Before we go, I've got a question for all of us to think about. What is our favorite topic of conversation? Our go-to subject with our dearest loves? But wait, before we answer, Scripture tells us in Luke chapter 6, verse 45, that out of the abundance of the heart, our mouth speaks. In other words, we'll talk most about what means most. If Jesus is yet to become our conversation, He is yet to become our life. Truth, I've known life both ways. And my friend, there is no comparison. There's nothing better out there, nothing sweeter, nothing more fulfilling. Jesus is everything we long for. Go all in and watch Him become your everything. That's it for this week. If you're enjoying the podcast, would you be so kind as to give it a review and share it with your friends and family? Remember, you can also subscribe to my newsletter at the website. That's bellofallthingssouthern.com. Until next time, may the good Lord bless you and keep you, make His face to shine upon you, and give you peace. This is Shelley with Hugs for All.